Welcome back to World Beat. I am George Collins. If you're just pulling up a chair, we are talking with Kat Carey, National Secretary for the SNP Socialist and the Women's Officer of the Aberdeen Independence Movement, as well as the co-host of the Talkin' Sense podcast. If you haven't gotten up to speed, I'd recommend booting up the first couple segments of this episode. Kat, sticking with what we were talking about a little bit ago, should Scotland achieve independence, it's obviously still going to exert influence on the remaining United Kingdom, whatever that happens to look like, in the same way that two sovereign nations can influence each other in terms of which one's making the right moves. And certainly geographically, it's like, it's right next door, right? We got that saying in the US of like, you know, I hate it as much as I hate my neighbor, right? But there, unless you're like me and you're from out in the sticks and the nearest neighbor's 5 miles away. But the point being is that even if there are no longer Scottish representatives in Parliament down in Westminster, there is still going to be some level of influence that Scotland exerts. What do you think that could possibly look like?
Well, this is something, there's some bit of ownership that people down in England seem to feel about Scotland, where I don't really speak for like British people, you know what I mean? Like the British electorate, because I'm not welcome to speak down there, right? Like my voice matters here, it doesn't down there. A lot of people seem to feel that like they're British and they get to speak for all. And like, why would you want to come here and break up my country? I'm like, well, it's not a country for one thing, it's four countries. And and they go like, well, America's a union. I'm like, nah, no, not really. Not the way you're
That's a different ball game, man. That's totally different. Yeah, that's like putting baseball and cricket next to each other. It's like, yeah, there's a bat and there's a ball. It's about where it stops. I guess there's bases too and runs. You get what I mean.
I would say like NFL football and rugby is the way. Yeah, all right. It's just one you can throw forwards, the other one you can't. Yeah. And like they'll go, people go, well, what would you say if you guys went to war when you had people succeed? I'm like, okay, one thing, no offense to any of my friends or your listeners in Texas. If Texas wanted to secede and they voted for it, I'd be like, good on ya. Like, go be free, have fun. Like any state, go ahead, do it. You know, like I think of the future relationship as being like a US and Canada, and I'm from like, talked about the upper Midwest. Like I have friends from the other side of the Great Lakes and I have a lot more in common with them than I do like my husband, but you know, like culturally growing up, because he was raised in like the South and out West. So yeah, I think of future relationships as like, hey, do you guys ever want to have a relationship with the EU again, but you can't get back in? Scottish independence can help you, you know, like it just doesn't have to be this like zero sum game. And I really do think they need some reforms down there. What they need, that's not for me to tell them, but like, if they ever want proportional representation, I can't see how else they get it.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think that right now, what I've often been told is that so much of what Scotland exerts in Parliament in Westminster is very much like a left influence that, by and large, I mean, yeah, you might get the occasional conservative Scottish MP, but for the most part, you can count on that the Scottish reps are going to be more on the left side of the spectrum. That does influence the debate. Do you think something like that can continue with an independent Scotland in terms of shaping what English politics end up looking like?
So what I think is that, so if you, like we talk about the current government down there right now, Boris Johnson has like this insane majority, right? The Tories have this insane majority and they got like 30% of the vote overall, but they have this like veto proof majority to do whatever they want. So I think by like pulling out, right? And like having them have their system rejigged in whatever way can represent the views of the people that live there better will make the country be more left, because I don't think it could be more right. Like the way that it is right now is just
there's only one way for it to go, guys. Like, you know,
it's, and like Labour right now is trying to court all the old people's votes to work mathematically. Like, imagine all the Republicans like voting restrictions were put into play and like centuries old, and that's all you had to work with. You know, it's just, yeah, I think that they will move to the left, but I don't think it'll be like a direct influence. There'll be a gap. There'll be a void to fill. And like, they've got to improve their, what they do and how they do it. Mm-hmm. If without us there to like be that left voice for them.
And who do you think could potentially fill that void? Does Labor have to make a shift more into the Corbyn wing? Does a new party emerge to fill that? What do you think?
I don't know. I think that, like, unfortunately, Labor keeps voting against proportional representation, which I think, if you think about it, like, in America, there's only two parties, and it's, you know, winner takes all. Imagine having five parties and it's winner takes all. No wonder the Tories win all the time, right? Like, I think that they need to have some kind of voter reform, or else it doesn't matter how it will change. And that's how the Tories have kept a hold of power. That's how the system is so archaic and unfair. It's like inherent, you know, you talked about the people yelling at each other. It's not only like private schoolyard bullies. It's also very like misogynist and ableist, and like it values certain things that maybe you shouldn't value, like having a loud voice and yelling over someone maybe isn't the best characteristic in a politician, you know. I really feel for the people that are down there trying to affect change in these like ancient halls, like where people ride around with gold gilded parrot, you know, carriages and stuff. It's just it's kind of surreal. But yeah, like, I don't think we get to have a say in how they change. Like, I can only have hopes and suggestions for how they change.
Well, and something I think about, which I find really funny just in the context of this discussion here. I remember when the independence campaign was happening. I think it's the most that any American has ever paid attention to Scottish politics in like 300 years or something. But so many of the arguments against independence, and I talked about this with Neil a little bit, it almost seemed like you had Scottish arguments in favor of independence, and you had British arguments against it. And what I mean by that is that so much of the campaign for no would revolve around things like, y'all won't be able to use the pound no more, right? Just like these very niche things like that. But one that really stood out to me, even at the time, was that there was an argument, you could even see it played on the BBC, where they would say, well, if Scotland leaves, then they're just going to throw the English left to the wolves, right? And the Tories are just going to stamp them out. And it's like, I ain't no gambling man. I got Greek blood. We're really bad gambling addicts, but I still don't bet a lot of money. But I would put the deed to my house on the line that after this thing is done, y'all are never going to care about that again.
Yeah.
Like, it was very fascinating to me that the only time that Scotland's left influence was ever talked about as something that the UK needed was in the context of it not being there no more. And it's not even coming from the left wing of Labor. Like, it wasn't even that crowd saying it. This was coming from the people who on any other day are going to despise that left influence.
And it's interesting.
well, but what that speaks to me is, you know, I'd be curious for your thoughts on this. I wonder if we could classify Scotland as being in almost like a colonial relationship with England, in that rather than how this is often presented. And again, I go back to, I feel like this has maybe been a sentiment for a while, not just in Scotland, but in places like Wales. And I think certainly in Northern Ireland, you get this, that sure, there's all this fanfare about that. Yeah, we are four countries, which that description in and of itself implies some sort of equal footing, even when that really ain't how this works. And in the case of Scotland in particular, looking at the fact that this was really the laboratory for a lot of the first neoliberal experiments in economics, right, where things like austerity could be implemented there before they hit England to see what's actually going to happen. It's like, and that affects people. Like, goddamn, that's people who lose their jobs, right? And they're not food secure. And there's all these different impacts. And to me, it's very reminiscent of a lot of these ideas of like the British East India Company and the fact that India became this testing ground for all these different policies, procedures, military operations, and things like that. What are your thoughts on something like that?
So, I mean, I kind of argue with people who call Scotland a colony quite a bit. And I see what you're saying by it, but I think of more of, I think of it more as being very similar to Hawaii. And I lived in Hawaii for 5 years. And you know, Hawaii was coerced to sign a partnership agreement.
That's right.
With the US. And because they were coerced, like Native Hawaiians aren't Native Americans. They don't have the same rights that Native Americans do. And it, you know, for better or worse, they're at a, in a different status, but like they're a state, you know what I mean? If you say like, I want to go back to the States, they're like, that's the mainland. We are a state.
That's right.
For Scotland, because it was so much, because it was the brain drain and stuff, right? So like a lot of people from Scotland were on the slaver ships there. You walk around Edinburgh and you go, oh yeah, this is what the East India Company and the slave trade can buy. Like there's a lot of opulence. Did it go to everybody? No, but I don't think it's, I think it's very dangerous to like not recognize the partnership and the role that Scotland has had in all this, even though, yeah, like, I mean, in a Scotland's less populated, people who are making the decisions want it to affect people further away from them, people who can't get that, can't actually vote them out, right? So like they don't have a Utah or a Nevada where they can like do the nuke sites, right? They mm-hmm. they go and do it in Scotland. But I don't agree with the colonial, like with painting Scotland's a colony, because I think that there's a lot of things that you risk painting over, skipping over when it comes to like racial equality and stuff like that. But, you know, they know what they can get away with. And like in any organization or government, you know where you can put something to get votes. You know where you don't need votes and you can do whatever you want. And that's what Scotland's been for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And where do you think we're headed? You know, we've talked about all these different dynamics at play that may prevent, at least in the short term, another indie ref from really getting off the ground. At the same time, you know, I've alluded to Johnson's tanking numbers down in London. The next general election is about a year out from now. Of course, that means that campaigning is going to start pretty soon. What do you expect from Scottish politics over the next year? How is that election going to influence things? And what does the future of an independence referendum look like?
Well, we've got local elections coming up. So we've got in May, so where the councils are elected. And that's a big deal, because if it's SNP led or if it's Labour led or, you know, unionist led, there's that divide. There's that binary choice that's not actually normal in British politics, where I think that the only thing that I've heard from the British and from the no side, the unionist side, is to delay and to put it off and to delay and to put it off. I don't think they have a lot of argument. They have threats. They have a lot of things, but like fuel poverty, like our heating bill's about to like at least double. And, you know, there's not food on the shelves because of Brexit. People are out of work. There's a lot of things going on where people's lives are getting worse and worse and worse. And how soon is it going to be? I don't know, because like, you know, there's been the Scottish independence movement's a peaceful movement. There are some that, you know, they don't care. They just want it. But, you know, I don't want my kids to grow up in war. Do you? Like, you know what I mean? I remember ideally, all the stuff in Northern Ireland. Yeah. So it might take a little longer. I mean, right now they're gearing up to put forward an independence referendum or a plan for it in 2023. If the British government says no, they're going to have to answer for that. But like, I don't know, radical incrementalism, is that all we can hope for, I guess, to keep the peace? I think there's a way that you can litigate this through the international courts, you know, they can do in it. They try and compare Scotland to Catalonia in Spain. The difference is the Spain has a written constitution that outlaws referendums like that. So when they did it, it was literally illegal. It's not illegal for Scotland to hold an advisory referendum. It's just not binding. So you take that referendum and then you relitigate it and then you take it to the courts and take it to the international community. Like, it's not a fast process, but each step is very, very important towards achieving it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fun. It's not sexy, but that's what we got.
I mean, things rarely are in politics, if we're being completely honest, right? Mm-hmm. It's a messy process with that. And also just on a meta level, I remember back in 2014, and then of course this became a component of why the Brexit referendum was so impactful in Scottish politics, was the question of the European Union. And I will say that the winds have shifted on that a little bit, not in terms of how Scots feel about it, but just in terms of just the reputation of the EU in general, because regardless of whether one supports it or don't, or supports it in its current form, like a stick and pivot kind of a thing, there's been a lot of consternation, especially around things like the coronavirus response, the fact that there is so much power that's concentrated in Paris and Berlin. How does that change? I mean, do you sense that since I guess I'll frame it this way, given that that was such a point, not just for Brexit, like this has been a very dicey political question concerning not just the UK in general, but Scotland's relationship to it. How do you think, with the change in dynamics of the EU, has that influenced the sentiment in Scotland around independence or anything like this? Not in terms of whether or not it'll go forward, but in terms of what a post-independent Scotland's relationship to the EU could look like. I don't know if that makes sense. It was kind of a jumble.
Well, there's definitely more people who support independence because they, you know, they want Scotland to be in the EU or to have a closer relation. They don't want, you know, they might have been unionists if we would have stayed in the EU, but that was the last straw. And they're like, you know what? No, we can't do better. We would definitely do better on our own. I think a lot of the sentiment is already baked in. I don't think a lot of people have changed their opinion on the EU since the pandemic. I think that people are a lot more pragmatic about it in Scotland. So we need immigrant labor here. We have a population of 5.5 million people. I don't know what the size is. I should be able to compare Scotland to a state size wise, but I cannot off the top of my head. I might have to look that up, but it's only 5.5 million people, right? There's a lot of land. There's a lot of stuff. We need to have that relationship and actually, like, to be economically feasible and stuff like that. Like, I'm not an economist. I'm an elderly millennial. Everything I ever saved up my money for was not available when it came time for me to buy it. Right. So, you know, to me, money is imaginary in a way that, like, we have resources, we have like geopolitical positioning and everything like that, where Scotland's important. I study EU politics and like there's things about it that are fascinating, but like whatever Scotland's relationship is with the EU, if it's just like the trade deal and like freedom of movement, it's kind of a proxy. The single market and freedom of movement is kind of a proxy for like how open Scotland wants to be with the rest of the world anyways. So I think that there are people that want to have like a confirmatory referendum to rejoin the EU, but I do think that we'll like join the trade agreement and stuff like that, because you don't want to become a satellite state, right? If you're a newly independent, mineral rich, you know, resource rich nation, you know, I don't want Scotland to be a satellite state of the US or China or Russia or anything. The EU is really the safe one to like, you know, throw your lot in with, I guess.
Hit your wagon to, as you might say in Hicks speak.
Yeah, there we go. I'm not Western enough. I have to draw on your Western
lingo. Right.
Yeah.
So, well, and now I do think about this, you know, having pitched that question, I now think that, you know, for a lot of like common folks, common working folks in Scotland, the EU is probably just like not even on the radar. Not to say that they don't like think about it, but I wonder if it really influences their day-to-day lives as much as it's often made out to be, which to me presents kind of an interesting idea where, you know, given how pivotal the Brexit vote was in spurring this question, and yet is it something that actually would end up affecting whether or not folks have jobs or not, kind of a thing? Like, it's the type of thing where I think about, like, in the States, right? Not that everything in the world has to be compared to American politics. It's just what I know. But you get a lot of folks who, you know what they vote on? They vote on, like, are you going to keep my job, right? Like, you know, are you going to raise my wages? Is my union shop still going to be there come November 7th?
I agree with you. 7th? But I also think that that's what led Scotland to being pro-immigrant and pro-EU is because, like, there's Polish communities, right? There's different communities. And, like, your neighbor is, you know, somebody who might have had to go back to the EU or is worried about it, or is, now the prices went up and they can't go back and forth as they used to, right? So, like, there are already immigrants in Scotland, and it's not a, like, protect our jobs from them. It's like, oh, we need more people to do these jobs to function as a society. So it's not, I would love to say, like, people are just better here, but that's not it. People are people, right? And it's all about, like, even if it's for the collective good here, we know that you need immigrants to be able to come in and to leave and, you know, to hang their hat here. Even from the people that you think might be like, if they lived somewhere else, they might be worried about their jobs and protecting it. Mm-hmm. I just don't think there's enough people, you know, there's cities and everything, but it's they're going to take our jobs isn't really there the way I see it in other places.
Well, and I'll flash back to something that Neil said when we talked, where he said that whole sense of, you know, some people might call it socialist in a way, and I think that's accurate, but the idea of like a collective of being there for each other, he says, that's just baked into a lot of Scottish sentiment in a way that it ain't even in other parts, certainly not in England, but even like in other parts of the kingdom, that Scotland is the real home for that kind of thing.
I think actually it's the, like, the British system and how they outlawed things that were Scottish that really kind of made that the norm, right? Because Scotland was a bunch of different places and they're not all the same, but outlawing Doric and Gaelic and kilts and everything Scottish all as one drew Scotland together as more of a collective than it ever was before.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say that because I'm not a historian, but that's my two cents. That's my impression.
No, but I think it's accurate, right? And I always like to remind my Scottish friends, like, hey, the Romans never got to you. Right, they built Hadrian's Wall to keep them out because they're just like, oh, we don't want to fuck around with that. no, sir. Mm-hmm. So, lastly, Kat, I know you've got this podcast, Talking Sense, that is going to be rebooting soon. Just talk a little bit about that. What is that, and what can folks look forward to from that?
Yes. So, well, for your American listeners, I don't know if they've heard that there's been kind of a culture war going on in the UK and in Scotland about, you know, like, trans rights versus supposedly women's rights, which doesn't make sense to me. You know, in America, like, I never really thought that a trans woman wasn't a woman. But a lot of us have seen things like that, the more progressive side of the SNP, and we kind of try to do something about it, right? Because we're in this party, we don't want this stuff to be carried out in our name. So we have a small group that, like, will write blog articles every once in a while, but got to be really good friends with my co-host Aaron, who's from Canada. So, like I said, different sides of the Great Lakes, but we're both from the Great Lakes, North America. Mm-hmm. She is doing a PhD in history. I'm doing a master's in politics. We're just, you know, two women who are very embedded in the Scottish politics, like, game, and just want to talk about it in just from our perspective, that's pretty much it. So you hear two people without Scottish accents, two women talking about politics. And she's one of the leaders of OFI, the Out for Independence, the LGBT wing. So, you know, queer politics are a big part of it. I'm heterosexual, but I try to be. I don't really like the term ally because it seems like a label that's unnecessary. Like, I try not to be an asshole.
I mean, when it comes to ally, it's been pointed out. I think Rosa Clemente made this point that ally is a very passive thing. Well, you can just say you're an ally and then sit on your ass and do jack shit. But accomplice is often the term that she thinks is a better fit.
Oh, I like that, actually. Yeah, because you're tying your fate a little bit more, I think. Yeah. But anyways, so we had done about 5 episodes and really, really enjoyed it. But as two academics get drawn into their work and can't do anything, that's what happened to us. But the folks at UnGag, Neil and the rest of them had said, oh, we like this. We'd actually like to reboot it. And what do we need to do to make this happen? So we're recording so February is LGBT History Month in Scotland, in the UK and Scotland. So we're recording an interview with Jordan Daly, who is one of the founders of the TIE campaign, which is Time for Inclusive Education, where my kids have both come up in school from like kindergarten, from primary one on, learning about at an age, you know, appropriate way about like different relationships that aren't mom and dad, right? Mm-hmm. So it's including everyone. So we're going to talk about that and kick it off. So we have a back catalog that I think UnGagged is going to release. You know, we talk about Israel and Palestine with our friend who is an anti-Zionist Jewish activist, which is kind of interesting to hear about things from him, and sex workers' rights and how, you know, banning it, you know, paying people to help them out of poverty is maybe the way out of that, instead of trying to like make certain parts of it illegal.
Yeah, all sounds like some good stuff. So folks, keep an eye out for that. Kat, thank you very much for your time. Anything you want to add before we wrap up?
Oh, just thanks for having me on. It's really great to be able to talk to another American about how things work over here, because it fits and it doesn't fit, and it's happy chaos.
You know, sometimes the outsider can have the most prescient view. Well, thank you very much for coming on. This has been World Beat with George Collins. We'll see you on the next one. Oh, hello. Hello. Oh, uh-huh. Oh, man. Yo, I feel like shit. I feel numb. Well, thank God I got my rum. I feel numb. I feel numb. Not enough rum. I feel numb. Mother Nature got my back, but where Father Time? What? How long till the clocks are on my side? Why my mind fight everything that I like? Anything that's self-destructive, go ahead, I let it slide. Let it go. If the crime fit the punishment that I must have wanted it, I hate to tell my trauma again and feel redundant. And it really don't do nothing but stuff a couple of wanted thoughts inside my muffin busted, and I just can't stop it. Uh-huh. I think my brain is gonna pop, leave some red on the sheets. I guess that's what they call achieving some peace. But honestly, I could use somebody to help, cause it always backfired when I tried myself. Yeah. I feel numb. Well, thank God I got my rum. I feel numb. Not enough rum. I feel numb. Why would I feel pain when I could feel nothing? Been a while since my name entered your discussion. Little mix of feeling numb and feeling dumb. It's just me and my bag. I've been feeling just like a bum. Can you spare me the shit or just some Mary? My reality is hairy. You won't know it if it's scammy though. No. Round you like the merry-go. My fears are intangible. Yep. Maybe I'll be free if you pardon me like I'm Harry. Oh, Harry, oh. Where my benzos? Where all of my kinfolk? Where the ones who's supposed to want to see me get my wrist froze? Fuck you like you Jim Crow. Yep. Crush you like a menthol. Yep. Newport, new dad, I do you like a bimbo. I'm so over being the bigger man. I'm 6'3", you can miss me with the chicken scratchy. You a fucking sycophant. We ain't going to
nah. Talk behind my back and you'll be shitting in a piss pan. This man really hurting, you know, cause he thought he had somebody, certainly don't. Guess it ain't that common for his courtesy go. Got so much pain in his soul, so like courtesy blow. I feel numb. Well, thank God I got my rum. I feel numb. Why I want to be numb.